With that, we'll start.
Okay, so this fascinating sugya on Daf Dalet at the Hidbik Pas B'Tanur. There are many, many different subtopics we could focus on. Ultimately, we want to talk about the fundamental trade-offs that the sugya is considering. The whole question of Chatei Kidei Sheyizaka Chavercha, or Chatei Kidei Sheyizaka Atzmacha, you know, the central topics that really catch our fascination in the sugya, ultimately would be the question of what type of trade-offs can we make, should we make, must we not make, on behalf of others, on behalf of ourselves, how exactly do you cheshbon some of these considerations? There is so much just about the broad attitudes towards life that can be derived from the sugi, and hopefully we'll be able to sketch out a little bit of that. But just also to spend a few minutes talking about some of the other things that come out of this Gemara and about some of the basic assumptions. So first of all, we kind of glossed over the central topic of at least Metzias discussion here, the concept of Rediyas HaPas, just to say a few words about that. So Rediyas HaPas, again, I think we did explain a little bit, is the removal of the bread from the wall of the oven. That the way they would cook in those days is that they would stick the flour up against the wall while it was baking, and then when it's ready, so you have to bring it down. And the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Chav Tes, and again, I'll maybe provide some more detailed Mar Makomos about this tomorrow, so you can retroactively look at some of the things we'll mention in the next few minutes. Chav Tes and Beis, that Tekiyos on Shabbos and Rediyas HaPas are not malachos. They are chachma ve'ena malacha. So it's not that there is a actual malacha involved in doing this. That's not the issue our Gemara is considering. But presumably there is some issur d'rabbanan. What's the issur d'rabbanan? So it sounds like that's at least what we're talking about, that there is some kind of an issur d'rabbanan. Is it possible it may be even more than an issur d'rabbanan, some type of a issur d'oraisa on a lighter scale? Theoretically, the Rishonim that we have in front of us, for the most part, seem to assume that we're talking about a issur d'rabbanan, and in any event, for the Gemara to make any sense, it has to be something less than an absolute malacha. Hi.
Issur d'rabbanan, I just think about this. Mm-hmm. Rosh Hashanah, we say you can't build a shofar in that carry, still d'rabbanan. Can that be the reason?
Can't be which reason?
Can't, the reason why you don't blow the shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos is because it's a chachma, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So that's exactly the context of the discussion over there. That the Gemara there wants to know that what's the issue with blowing shofar on Shabbos, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos. So what exactly is the issue, and what exactly is the issue in either direction? What would the issue be, what would the heter be? So in that context, the Gemara tells you that, strictly speaking, it's not something that would have otherwise been prohibited, because it's not a malacha. So it's not that tekiyas shofar is inherently problematic to Shabbos, but because of the concern of carrying, so that's why we have a prohibition.
But if we say like,
oh, but that's a question. So what type of issur? If it was dominant, so now the question I want to address in a second, if it's an issur d'rabbanan, do you assume that tekiyas are treated the same way?
Oh, okay.
But even if it is, then we'd have to figure out what exactly the context of that issur d'rabbanan is. So, but we'll get to that in a second. First of all, so it sounds like from the Gemara that on the one hand, Rediyas HaPas is not a malacha, that's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. But on the other hand, it seems to hear like it's us, or at least midrabbanan. Maybe there's room in some Rishonim to say a little bit more, but at least that there's an issur d'rabbanan involved. So what's the issur d'rabbanan? The issur d'rabbanan seems to be that this is part of the baking process. Right? It seems to be that allowing you to do this would create the impression that you're allowed to bake, and that's the way the Rambam sounds. The Rambam in Perek of Gimel of Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Aleph, sounds like the issue is that it's a Shema Lavo Lofos, that you'll come to bake if you participate in the baking process. On the other half, it's noteworthy, and I have a little bit of charata for not putting in this on the Marmar Kamos earlier, but you'll fill this in tomorrow. But the Mishnah on Daf Yutes in the base in our Perek in Shabbos does talk about a problem of putting something into the oven even before Shabbos if it's not going to finish the baking process before Shabbos. Now, parenthetically, what does it mean to finish the baking process, and what does it mean in general when we talk about baking here? So the Mishnah, Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, talks about krimas panim, which means that it starts to have a crust on the bread. Now, presumably a crust on all sides of the bread, that itself is a little bit of a discussion. That here, the language in Rashi over here is that we're talking about before this finishes. So Rashi says, kodem afia, before it is baked. So that means it's got to be baked completely. It sounds like from the Mishnah in a similar context that we mean that it has to have its halachic minimum of baking, which is this krimas panim. There's a parallel to this in the context of bishul. When we talk about bishul, so we refer to a certain minimal stage. Obviously, this is a topic that, God willing, we'll get to when we talk about the malach of bishul. But there is a notion of Michael ben Drusoy, that the food has to be prepared to a certain level. It's a machlokus rishonim, whether that's half-cooked or a third-cooked. But ben Drusoy was a thief, was a ganav who was lucky enough to have a halacha named after him. So it's hard to know what profession you should go into if you want to have, it's the flip side, doctors get diseases named after them, ganavim get halachas named after them. Everything is a little bit ironic. So he gets immortalized in halacha as the one who gave us the standard for cooking, that the minimum that he would eat before he made his getaway, the minimum that he would wait for it to be cooked. So that's the standard for cooking and halacha, and so that's paralleled here in terms of baking of krimas panim. So that standard, before that happens, so the Mishnah says you have to, if you're going to put something in the oven before Shabbos, it's got to be before it reaches that level. Otherwise, it seems like you're doing something wrong even before Shabbos. Some it can't be a straight out malacha, you're doing it before Shabbos, but there's something that's prohibited on that level. So it could be that the Isser to take it out is specifically in that context, if there's an assumption that you did something wrong. Is there a general isser of Rediya Sapas separate from any type of Maisa Avera? Is there a Rediya Sapas prohibition if you put it in before Shabbos with enough time, and you just happen to have left it in the oven? So that's an issue, we'll talk about it in a second. That's an interesting point. That Tosus in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Tosus over there quotes a machlokus between himself and Rabbeinu Chananel, that it seems to be somewhat of a stira. That on the one hand, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that it's not a malacha, and here, sounds like it's awesome. So Tosus assumes, like we would assume without really giving it too much thought, that it's not a stira, it's asur midrabanan. So the Gemara says over there it's not a malacha because it's not. But the isur that we're talking about here is an isur drabanan. But Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who felt that he had to be miyashev the stira. That Rabbeinu Chananel says that it's two different situations. That if it has completely turned into bread and it's totally finished, so then it wouldn't be asur to take it out. Then there is no issue of Rediya Sapas. But our Gemara, which talks about that, is talking before that happens, because that's the whole premise as far as its own considerations. So Rabbeinu Chananel says that taking it out while it's still doughy, so that is something which is Doma Talisha, which is something which seems to border upon kneading the dough, a different malach. As a consideration, not necessarily because of afia, but because maybe this process is somewhat like lisha. So Tosfos doesn't accept that whole discussion because Tosfos says it is not bothered by the steer. It's not a steer. That Gemara just means it's not a malacha, and this Gemara means that it's a midrabana. You don't have to explain it at all. But it's interesting to explore the possibility of what exactly is the nature of this isser. Is it an isser which is meant to correlate specifically to afia? Is it nisr because of something else? Is it maybe bordering on a nisr deraisa? Is it a shvus? It's not really 100% agreed upon what exactly is the nature of the prohibition. So then the question could also be asked, so let's say there was no avera involved. It wasn't put in on Shabbos, and it wasn't put in on Erev Shabbos too close. It was put in on Erev Shabbos with enough time, and it just happens to now still be in the oven. So is there an isser of Rediya Sapas without any problem? So that was the Machlokas HaRishonim, that the Ramban said that one taking it down at that point, one taking it down at all, would have to do so with a shinoi. If one needed the bread for Shabbos, you'd have to take it down with a shinoi. And the Ran disagrees. The Ran says, no, if there's no Isser involved in putting it in the first place, so then the only consideration in taking it down is not even a Shvus, it's a Uvdin Dachal. It's basically a weekday type of thing. And if you need it for Suda Shabbos, so then it's not an Uvdin Dachal problem, and you wouldn't have to worry about it at all. You wouldn't have to be Mishana at all. So that is a Machlokas between the Ran and the Ramban. And it's a question how the Rambam fits in. People have been medayik different ways in the Rambam, so Blinetter tomorrow you can take a look at the Rambam in two different places and see if you have a strong feeling as to what his attitude is about this. But it seems like it would parallel the question of Tekiyos, which Stefan brought up, that is there an Ister D'Rabbanan to blow shofar on Shabbos? Or if so, it would then extend to blowing shofar on Yantif, presumably also, because if it's some type of shvus, if there is some type of a shvus not to blow shofar, if that's included, let's say, in instrument playing or something like that, so then presumably that would apply to Yantif as well.
That's like insane, though, because then you'd never blow shofar.
Ah, so it's not insane, but it's something that has to be figured out. There is a question that Rishonim asks separately from this, that they say that if Chazal went to the lengths of saying don't blow shofar on Shabbos because we're concerned about Hotzah, why didn't they aser it also because of concern of Shem Yitake and Klishir, that we should be worried that you'll fix the instrument? And they assume, using different language, but that it's something like insane, because that would mean you'll never blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and that would be a problem. Now, what problem would it be? I mean, we see that the Torah is apparently willing to counter a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's apparently willing to tell you, set aside the mitzvah d'oraisa of blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah in order to observe the d'rabbanan of watching out for Hotzah, and that's going to be one of the central issues in our sugya, as we'll get to. So then, why can't you say the same thing? Okay, so Chazal said, don't blow shofar on any Rosh Hashanah because it's Yantif, and there's a shvus that's relevant to Yantif. So many assume that this power that Chazal have, which is a major sugya in the Seches Yevamos, it's a fascinating sugya, very, very fascinating lumdus that's involved. Well, we can't take it head on because of time, but we can touch upon some of the themes. So apparently Chazal do have the ability to contradict the Torah in some limited way, but to completely uproot a mitzvah so that it no longer exists, that they couldn't do. So clearly there is a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and if they're going to say don't blow shofar ever on Rosh Hashanah, so that would be very hard to believe that they could totally remove the mitzvah from the Torah, so that's not an option. While saying not to blow it on the occasional year when it falls out on Shabbos, that doesn't involve the complete removal of a mitzvah. That's possible. It's also relevant that it doesn't directly contradict the Chumash. The Taz has a famous principle, I think we've mentioned in the past, I think we talked about this, that I'm not just the one calling it famous, that others call it famous as well. And Reb David Cohn has a section in one of his Svarim, Vul Yavetz. He has a essay about this Taz, and he writes in the introduction that this Taz is such an important Taz. Taz has a comment in three different places in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, where he says this is so. He says that if someone says the Taz Hayadua, the famous Taz, they're talking about this Taz. And then more recently, he came out with a whole volume on this Taz with the title, Taz Hayadua, I think that's the title to say for the famous Taz. So what does the Taz say? So the Taz says that even though Chazal are able to legislate things which happen to contradict the Torah, but they can't explicitly contradict the Torah. So the Torah says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, so Chazal can't come and say, don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. The Torah is not explicit that you can't blow, that you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. We just figure that out because there's no Isser D'Oraisa to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. So then why should you not blow shofar on Shabbos? So therefore the Torah never explicitly says not to blow shofar sorry, the Torah explicitly says blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, even when it's Shabbos. So we're not contradicting that by making Gezeira not to. Some Rishonim wanted to suggest, some Achronim wanted to suggest, that the question is sometimes asked, why did Chazal not make a similar Gezeira by Bris Milah? That when it comes to Bris Milah, so we observe it on the eighth day, and even if it's Shabbos, if all the other conditions are in place. So why don't we say that there's a concern that there'll be, and there's many more concerns that come up in the context of Bris Milah than there are in the context of Shofar or Lulav. So why don't we say that it's very easy to imagine why there would be a good idea to make a Gzeira not to have Milah on Shabbos, even though that's the Dimon HaTorah. So Rishonim ask about that. Why did Chazal make a Gzeira by Shofar and by Lulav and not by Bris Milah? So one possible answer is that the Torah essentially, by emphasizing Yom HaShmini, which Chazal read to mean even on Shabbos, so therefore the Torah essentially is telling you explicitly that even if it's on Shabbos, you have to do it, so therefore Chazal can't come and contradict that. And the reason...
Gemara itself, I bring up a bunch of different examples of things where you think that it should be Dovah Shabbos to do it.
Well, then it gets the question of preparations for the meal. Like, at the beginning of blaze the meal, the question is, other than the meal itself, when you have to bring the knife, you have to do other things that themselves possibly are malachas, and then it gets complicated. There's machlokas in the Gemara, machlokas in Rishonim, what we allow. But the act of the bris meal itself is, right, and that's what's significant, is that the bris meal itself is a malacha, right? It's chavalah. So we need the Torah to tell us the chiddush, that you have to have a bris milah even on Shabbos, because otherwise we would not have known that, because it's a malacha. So therefore, that's a chiddush. Now, to go against that would involve contradicting the explicit din of the Torah. But since tkiyah shofar, kind of paradoxically, since tkiyah shofar is not a actual malacha, so it's not inherently a violation of Shabbos, so the Torah never has to spell out to us that we should blow shofar even on Shabbos. So now Chazal can come and answer it, because since it's not an iser min haTorah, so the Torah didn't have to explicitly permit it, so now Chazal could answer it. It's a little bit paradoxical, because it becomes easier to prohibit that which is not a malacha than to prohibit that which is a malacha. So that's why it's a little bit counterintuitive. So Bris Milah, maybe we can't asur on Shabbos, because since it's a malacha, it's explicitly permitted. But Tkiyah Shofar, since it's not a malacha, was never explicitly permitted, so Chazal came and asur it. So the question comes, so then, are these two things similar? Is Rediyas HaPas, since the Gemara groups them together, Rediyas HaPas and Tkiyah Shofar, it's a chachma ve'ein a malacha, so is there an Issa Drabanan by either of them or both of them? So since there's somewhat of a machlokas here, whether a Diyas HaPas is always Asur Midrabanan, is it only Asur in the context of a misdeed, or is it Asur across the board? So then you also have the question of whether Tkiyah Shofar, is there a Isser to blow Shofar on Yantif? So in this case, so it's not as insane as previously suggested, so no one is saying that we should not be allowed to blow Shofar on Rosh Hashanah in the context of the mitzvah, but the question comes up, what about outside the context of the mitzvah? So after, let's say, one has already fulfilled the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar, and one wants to practice, let's say, so is it permissible to practice blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, to blow shofar outside the context of the chiyuv? We'll take it for granted that the mitzvah overrides whatever the rabbanon there might be, the actual mitzvah itself. But if there's no mitzvah, so is it permitted? So the Taz assumes that there is no prohibition of Tkiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah at all, and on Yantif in general, and others disagreed. They point out there's a number of Tosfos in a few places. I can give you a list. There's a Rashba and Armasech that talks about this, about whether there is an Issa D'Rabbanan in general of Tkiyah Shofar on Yantif. And some of the later poskim, the Chacham Tzvi and the Panim Iris, they disagreed with this Taz, and they did assume that there was a issue of blowing shofar shalol tzorich on Rosh Hashanah. So there are some major nafkaminas to that question. A question of training children, let's say, to blow shofar. A question of blowing shofar on behalf of women, if you say it gets into the whole mitzvah, say Shazman Grama, and voluntary mitzvah, which is, I guess, too hot a topic to spend too much time on, but invoked in that discussion in general, is there any problem involved with blowing tequilas that are not, strictly speaking, obligatory. And now we're assuming still that if there is such an issue, that not only we, in general, so we blow more tequilas than the Torah requires, for sure. We're trying to get out of a lot of fakes. So we have tequilas d'orais and tequilas d'rabanan. So apparently we're assuming that the mitzvah tequilas, in general, are allowed, however we define the mitzvah. Now the question could also come up, what about tequilas that are l'chumra? What if you have extra tequilas afterwards that you can't even necessarily classify as d'rabanan? So it may depend. You're assuming that it rises to the level of sfeika d'oraisa, or is it less of a genuine suffix? So there's a lot to try to figure out about the question of whether there is any issa d'rabanan of tekiya shofar. So part of it has to do with the fact that the Gemara groups the two together, Rediyah Sapas and Tekiyos are Chachma of Eina Malacha, and yet it seems to be that maybe there's not a Malacha, but there's some issa d'rabanan. So is it true by both? Is it true in all cases? Is it true only when there's an Aveira? There is some discussion to be had in the Rishonim about this question. Okay, now, that being said, fine. So there's some kind of aveira involved, presumably an issa d'rabanan, of taking the bread out of the oven. So our Gemara sets up a situation where, on the one hand, you have a issa d'rabanan involved in taking down the bread, but there's a big Hilcha Shabbos reason to do it. And that is because the bread is in the oven, the clock is ticking away to full baked status. And at that point, there's going to be a problem. What kind of a problem? Chiyuv skila, right, a fiyah, but what kind of a level of problem? A chiyuv skila, karban, shogeg, amezid, different permutations in the Gemara, different possibilities, but there is a impending problem. And you know, clearly it makes a difference what kind of problem, not glossing over that question, but there's some kind of problem that is heading our way, so are we permitted to head off this problem by violating or somehow going against this issa d'rabanan of Rediyah Sapas? So, still many, many interesting questions ahead. But before we get to even those, again, this you could easily have a whole sefer on this sugya, but before you get even to those questions, so this has been a major, major battleground, this Gemara, because of what it seems to say about malachos in general. Before you get to the trade-off of the different cheshbonos, the whole premise here seems to be that this is a viable plan. And we're just asking the Shaila, is it mutter to do or not? Is it mutter? Is it recommended? Is it encouraged? Is it different permutations about that? But the whole premise seems to be that, okay, there is a viable plan on the table. That if you take this bread out of the oven, you will prevent the problem from happening. And that itself is a chiddush. Right? That itself, the idea that the malacha is not forfallen already, that you can stop it from taking place, this was a major issue, and it gets a lot of focus. Specifically, it's relevant by itself. It would be interesting just on its own, but as you mentioned in the past, again, depending on how long you've been learning Shabbos with us, over the past 3 years, or this year, but it's relevant, especially in light of another malacha. What malacha am I talking about?
Zoreya.
Zoreya. Right? Because of the malacha of Zoreya, a lot of attention is focused on this Gemara, but again, you could ask by itself. It's already noteworthy, this idea that you can thwart the malacha in mid-malach. In mid...
Why would you not be able to?
So the question is, you could have said, for various reasons, that maybe I did the malacha the moment I put it in, but even if you're not convinced logically that that's a logical way to look at it, the major issue that's contrasted with is Zoreya. So just to explain, we know that there is a malacha called Zoreya. We know that there is a prohibition to plant things on Shabbos. Now it happens to be that Zoreya is a particularly comprehensive malacha and involves a lot of other actions other than putting seeds in the ground. It could involve watering the grass and opening the shades and all kinds of other things. Yerushalmi has a very long list of things which could be included in Zoreya, and the Bavli has a shorter list, but a list nonetheless. But certainly it does seem to include on a very foundational, definitional stage that putting seeds in the ground is Zoraya. So the problem, as the Achronim ask, is as follows. That presumably, Zoraya is not significant if there is not what you would call a hashrasha. If the seeds are not going to take root in the ground, then presumably that's not Zoraya. If I have a Diet Pepsi can, and I drop the seed in the can, especially let's say if the can is empty, and right? So I drop the seed in the empty can, so nothing's going to happen. Right? So the melacha, and no one would say that that's usher. Right? So the act of Zoraya does not just mean putting a seed in something. It means putting a seed in the context where it's going to take root and where it's going to lead to growth. Hi.
Meaning there's a possibility of growth. Meaning the hashrasha only happens a month later. So
it's a machlokas in the Gemara how long the hashrasha takes. I'm sure it's a machlokas in Metzias as well. So without trying to paskin the Metzias in the Gemara, but even with the various opinions in the Gemara, let's assume it takes at least 3 days.
Okay, meaning it has to wait, the planting action has to be in the context where it's possible for it to.
So you're already working towards a resolution, how to define it, but the fact is.
That's what I thought you were saying.
Right, it could be, that might be the answer, okay. but it's not obvious, because it seems to be that the malacha only gets significance if it's going to grow. So that being the case, so where exactly do we define the malacha happening? Maybe you should say that if it takes root, that's also not growing yet. That's the first step of growing, is the taking root. So how exactly are the mechanics there? That if it can't take root in less than 3 days, let's work with that number just for simplicity's sake. So how exactly do you violate the Isser of Zoraya on Shabbos? You're going to tell me that you violate it if you plant on Wednesday? Sorry?
3 days earlier.
Right, so you say that it's an issur to plant on Wednesday because it'll take root on Shabbos. That's very hard to say for many, many reasons, even if we were so precise about it, but say, and we'll say a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but to say there's a chiyuv shmir Shabbos on Wednesday is very difficult for a number of reasons. So presumably it doesn't go in that direction. And to say that you have to have the hashrasha and the putting it into the ground at the same, both on Shabbos, so that doesn't seem to be so possible. There is discussion in the Cheskinach and others, what if that would happen, but that's certainly not the premise of the Malach of Zerei. The premise is it takes a few days. So how are you doing this? So you're going to, presumably we're talking about you put it into the ground on Shabbos. If you put it in the ground on Shabbos, it's not going to take root on Shabbos. Okay, so that's a problem, but maybe you could say that it doesn't have to all happen on Shabbos. Then the question is, how do we relate to what seems to be a stira between that concept and this Gemara? Because when it comes to Zoraya, so we have a length of time going on, and we have something put in the seed, that's the first step. And then some time passes and eventually it actually materializes, it actually takes root. So to say that you can be chayev on, to say that you can't be chayev on Shabbos without that, so the problem is that it doesn't all happen on Shabbos. So on the one hand, you seem to have to say that you can be chayev on Shabbos without that, that we can have a malacha of Zoraya that doesn't actually finish. Doesn't actually get to the end. But the problem is, our Gemara on Daf Dalet seems to say the opposite. Seems to say that if the Malacha doesn't actually get to the end, if something comes and interferes, so then you're not Chayv. So that's a problem on some level. How exactly do you reconcile what seems to be a difference between these two malachas, Zoraya and Bishul, which maybe we'll just add for the sake of comprehensiveness mention afterwards, that they are perennial enemies, that there are a number of areas in Hilchos Shabbos where contrasts between Bishul and Zoraya come up, and maybe they might all be related, they may not be related, maybe just in a few minutes we'll briefly mention what some of them are, but they're perennial foes. They keep coming to contrast with each other, that there are some differences between Zoraya and Bishul that force different shilas in the Achronim to try to figure out what exactly is the rule in Hilchos Shabbos that accommodates both. But this is the most famous one, that what's the story? If a malacha takes some time, if there's going to be some lag between your action and when the malacha really becomes relevant, so does that have to happen on Shabbos or does it not have to happen on Shabbos? If it doesn't have to happen on Shabbos, so then why is it possible to thwart it before it's over? And if it does have to happen on Shabbos, so how could you have Zriya? It's not a malacha that works. Hi. Okay, well, it'll probably come back to you. So this
oh,
is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes?
Is it necessarily, or we might be discussing this soon, but is it necessarily true that the Gemara says you save the guy completely from...
Not at all necessarily true. So that's part of what we have to try to figure out.
Yeah, it's lesser because only half.
Yeah, there's so much to figure out about this sugya. It's really fascinating. There's really so many different aspects to look at. So that's certainly an open question. So there was a major discussion about this whole Zriya, about the definition of Zriya vis-a-vis Bishul and other things. Again, either of these questions you could have asked without the Zriya. You could have posed this question about Zriya by itself, and you could have posed questions about the Sugya by itself, but they're brought into starker contrast when you take them next to each other and try to figure out what exactly is the guiding principle. So this is very... Yes, sir.
Well, one of the main interesting Bishul and Zariah should be that Bishul, you could start it, but if you don't get to that certain point, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to continue.
Is that not true about Zariah?
Yeah. If you plant something, as long as it's in there, it'll start growing a little bit. It'll continue.
Is that true? And if so, is there any significance to it start at the...
Should be significance, because then it's not going to be stopped.
Well, if you take it out, maybe it will be stopped. Now, that may be a relevant distinction, but let's, maybe that's not a relevant distinction, so let's see how that plays out. So, this is well known as a machlokas between the Menchas Chinuch and the Rashash. Now, the truth is, there are many others who have weighed in on this, and that it probably are, definitely are earlier Achronim who have taken similar stances to both of them, and there are probably Rishonim that you could interpret as being in either camp. And some of the Sfarim point out that maybe it's machlokas in the Mishnah, maybe it's machlokas Amoraim, that there are various positions that have been staked out over the past 2,000 years that seem to line up on one side of this question or the other. But again, like we said before, the irony of who gets known for things. So the Menchas Chinuch and the Rashash became the ones most associated with this issue, even though those are relatively recent Sfarim. And it's also interesting, the Rashash and the Menchas Chinuch were just about exact contemporaries. They both lived for most of the 19th century. They both lived in the 1800s, almost the exact same time. Almost exactly, both died around 1878 or so. And they had a big dispute about this. So the Rashash essentially understands. And the Rashash, if you want to look it up, and you definitely should, it's on the Mishnah and Daf Yud Gimel. It talks about the Zareya, so definitely add this to the extra Marmokomos list. The Rashash basically assumes, and focus on this point because it's an important point of dispute, that Zriya and Bishul are the same. They're treated the same. So that being the case, so we have to figure out, so what is the rule for both of them? So the rule is that you are chayev for your action on Shabbos, b'tnai. That there is a condition later on which could retroactively change things. That if it turns out later on that this bread never baked, or it turns out later on that this seed never took root, so then retroactively it'll turn out that you're off the hook. But they both work the same way. You're chayev for your initial action. I'll deny that it happens later. I think I once gave the example. I tried to register to vote on the day of the deadline. And I faxed in a registration form. And they called me up and they said they can't accept the fax. I have to mail it in. So I said, but it's the last day of registration. If I mail it in, you won't get it today. So I said, no, once they get my letter, they'll accept this fax. You know, the fax is accepted in this day, but it needs to be proved by a letter that I'll send them later. So retroactively, once they get the letter, I did it today. If they don't get the letter, it turns out I never registered to vote on that day. If they get the letter, then retroactively, I registered on the right day. Fine. So that's essentially how the Rosh Hashanah understands both of these malachas. It's the same way that if you do it, you're chayav on Shabbos, on a condition that it ends up becoming a significant action later. the Menchas Chinuch does not accept this premise, and the Menchas Chinuch assumes that there is not a direct parallel between Vishal and Zriya, that they have different rules. And that Vishal, you're only going to be Chayiv if it actually, Vishal slash Afia, you're only going to be Chayiv if it actually finishes on Shabbos, if it actually finishes that day. And you're only Chayiv with A finishing and B finishing on Shabbos. And that Zriya just has a different definition. That Zriya, you are Chayiv as soon as you put it into the ground. Although, as Arya was saying, presumably it can't be any stom ground. It has to be Roy Lizria. It can't be a Diet Pepsi can. It also can't be a desert. It has to be an arable land. It has to be land which has the potential to make it grow. But as soon as you put it in, you're going to be Chayiv. Now, why is there a difference between Zriya and Bishul? So that's a subject to a lot of speculation. And there is extensive writings in the Achronim afterwards. Because of the interest of time and because of the many different sugyas that are crammed into here, I'm not going to go into great detail about all of the suggestions, although I'll be happy to provide anybody who wants to research it with Maran Bacomo's list. There is a very extensive list of suggested distinctions between the two. Dvar Avram talks about it, Efikayam talks about it. Many, many Svarim have taken up this task of trying to explain what the difference is. Say for some Darach, he has a different approach. The Menchas Asher has an approach. There are many, many different approaches to what exactly the difference is. So a little bit he does. And I think that part of it is, just on the simplest level, you could say that it is a Lashon Bnei Adam question. Right? That essentially, think about it this way, that if I were to ask somebody put seeds in the ground, and my gardener, I told him he's got to plant these seeds. And of course, I totally have a gardener. And I told my gardener afterwards, so I come to him, I call him up an hour later, and I say, "Hope you're doing your job. Did you plant the seeds?" So he'll say, "Yes, he planted the seeds," assuming that he did. Right? But he's not going to say, "Let's see, I put them in an hour ago. I'm planting them right now. They should be finished in a few days." You know? He'll say, "I planted them." The fact that it takes a few days for them to take root, in his mind, he did what he has to do. However, if I call up my baker, because of course I have a baker, and I tell him that he has to bake some bread for me, so I call him up 5 minutes after he put the bread in the oven, and I say, "So, did you bake the bread?" What will he say? He'll say, "I'm baking it right now." Right? He won't say that I baked it already while it's still in the oven. Again, we're assuming honesty in both employees. But he'll say that I'm baking it right now. So that's probably significant, not just in a semantic sense, but it probably represents something about the mindset towards the malachos, that when it comes to planting, so you understand that you've done your part when you put it in the ground, even though there are other maintenance things you have to do in terms of watering it, perhaps, and the like, but you've done that stage of it by putting it in the ground. While baking, you're not finished until you take it out, and the malacha is still in process. Hi.
Still be only occurring in the case where the guy who's planning it is not doing anything else after that.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean,
burner, I don't know, forest or whatever.
Maybe, maybe not. Or he may just see that as follow up.
Like the baker, he's involved in changing the heat, so he has to, you know.
Maybe, but I don't even know if necessarily changing the heat is necessary. Right, even if that's the case, I don't know if that's necessarily why he says he's baking it still. Even if he didn't have to, we wouldn't necessarily say that he's finished baking it. He knows that his mind is still on. He pays attention to it until he takes it out. So that's also a relevant idea, the fact that you're going to be conscious of it until the time comes for you to take it out of the oven. You're hopefully not going to forget about it. While the seeds, you're not thinking about it all that time. You put it in, okay, maybe tomorrow you have to water it, maybe next week you have to do some weeding, whatever it is. But mentally, you did your part, and that's why you put it in the ground. That's the malacha. So again, if you look through the Svarim, there are many, many different suggestions as to how exactly to explain the distinction. There are many valid suggestions. They're all worthwhile. But that's essentially the premise the Menchas Chinuch is making, that they're not necessarily the same. Now, one could go further with this, and one could say, as Rav Pesach Frank writes in a tshuva, that there never is any basis to say that Malacha Shabbos have to necessarily parallel each other. That especially if we look to the Mishkan, this all taps into broader discussions, if we look to the Mishkan from Malachas, so perhaps they don't match. Perhaps we have one Malacha that was done this way, and one Malacha that was done that way, and some of them have a time delay, and some of them don't have a time delay, and some of them the focus is on the first part, and some of the focus is on the last part, and we have to look to the details, as others have said, for example, like the Afikayam says, look, there's a Malacha of Zareah. Zareah never happens on the same day, so Mamela, that's the Malacha. The Malacha is putting it in the ground, right, which we mentioned similar things in terms of other Malachas, like we said a little bit yesterday. That it sounds like from the Gemara that the Malacha of Zoreh, not to be confused with Zoreh, although it sometimes is, and Girsalos also, but that the Malacha of Zoreh, to throw something into the wind and have the wind sift it out, so there it sounds like from the Gemara that that probably doesn't follow rules of Shabbos either. Maybe that sounds like Rava, but it's a Malacha, so that's it. It's a Malacha, it doesn't have to follow the rules. So maybe that's it by Zareya also. Maybe there is a rule like this when it comes to Bishul, but Zareya can't possibly follow it, and Zareya is a Malacha. Therefore, the Mishkan tells us it doesn't follow the rules, and it's a Malacha nonetheless. So there's all kinds of different bases one can use to distinguish between the two, but that's essentially the position of the Menchas Chinuch, that there is a difference between the two. They're not treated the same. And again, there are many before them and after them who have said similar things. There are partisans on both sides, from earlier Svarim, from later Svarim. It's a major, major discussion. But Menchas Chinuch is Menchas Chinuch and the Rashash, they were zeichet to be the captains of the team. They were zeichet to be the ones who were most associated with this issue. So the question comes up. So there are at least two major nafkaminas lahalacha that emerged from this machlokas. It's not just a conceptual question. It has at least two major ramifications. One question would be that what would happen if, to parallel this Gemara, so what would happen if somebody comes, let's say on Sunday, so somebody comes on Sunday morning and he uproots the seeds. He has charata after Shabbos that, or you could even make a Gemara that parallels exactly this Gemara, but let's say he comes on Sunday, just to keep things simpler for a second, he comes on Sunday and he uproots the seeds that he planted. So has he negated?
At least 3 days for the
right, let's assume it's a 3-day period. So he comes on Sunday to take it out. So has he negated his Isser of Zriya? So according to the Rosh Hashanah, yes, the whole thing is totally all this tonight, and if you come and undo it later, then indeed you have undone it. While according to the Menchas Chinuch, no, the Malacha was done when you put it in. And it doesn't matter what happens later. It's not relevant what happens later. There is, in the Sefer Yesod HaYeshurun, it was written by a great Rav from Toronto, Gedalia Felder, so he has a whole discussion that it says in Shulchan Aruch that if you want to feed your chickens, so let's say you have chickens who are in a coop, they're on dirt, and you toss seeds to them to eat, so you can give them a day's worth of seeds or 2 days' worth of seeds to eat, but you shouldn't give them 3 days' worth of seeds, because if it's not enough that they're going to eat quickly, then it's going to eventually take root in the ground. So it sounds like from there, so it sounds like against the Menchas Chinuch, because it sounds like if you put seeds in the ground where they could take root, but someone's going to stop it beforehand because the chickens will eat them on Sunday, so then you're not going to be chayiv. Sounds like it's mutl chachila to do that. So others explain that that's not necessarily comparable, because this is essentially like non-arable land, that if you know there are animals there that are going to consume it, that it's basically not possible for it to take root because the animals will eat it, so then that's not really different than putting it in a desert where it can't really grow at all. You could clearly make a distinction, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing, because it's not shayach for this to plant. You could also distinguish that this is not, no sense of mice is real. Now, we would tell you not to throw seeds on dirt in general and leave it there, because it will take root and that will be a malacha, but at this point where he's feeding his animals who happen to be on the dirt, there's not a maisa zriya here at all. So it's not clear how strong of a question that is. But that was an objection that was raised against the Minchas Chinuch. Hi.
The Minchas Chinuch, if you already planted it as soon as you put it in, not only would it not help take it out, but would he say that if you try to take it out after you even did a kotzer, or not really?
So that's a separate question. So for simplicity, I made it Sunday, but let's come back to that question in a second. So the issue of just taking it out, so the Minchas Chinuch also makes it clear that he doesn't think that there's a difference between if you change your mind to tshuva afterwards, or if you planned on doing this to begin with, if you thought that it'll be fun, just you like living on the edge and doing show and tell malachas on Shabbos, teaching about the malachas in ways that come as close as possible, but then pulling the plug.
For the sake of Brisker Torah.
So if you planned on taking it out, he doesn't think that makes a difference. He thinks that that's essentially like bo naminas listor, that if somebody is going to build a building, but he plans on knocking it down, so it would still be the malacha of binyan putting it up in the first place. So this would still be the malacha of zriya. This is where the Minchas Chinuch and the Avnei Nezer, the Eglei Tal, they part company a little bit. That Avnei Nezer basically agrees with the Minchas Chinuch that you're chayiv on Shabbos for this maisa, but he does make an exception that if you never plan for it to take root, he includes that as part of the original issue. You have to plan for it to stay there and take root, and then if you decide later to change your mind, it's not going to help. But if you never planned for it to take root in the first place, maybe he's also factoring in questions like the chicken feeding question, things like that, that then he thinks he wouldn't necessarily be chayef. So it's a third position, but basically that's the Minchas Chinuch versus the Rashash with a nuance. The other major nafkamina between the two, a very major nafkamina, is what if you would put bread in the oven right before the end of Shabbos, right? The late Shabbos afternoon. So according to the Rashash, you would be chayiv for that, because it doesn't matter that it completes itself after Shabbos. The whole melacha is do the first thing all tonight that it finishes. So even if it finishes after Shabbos, you'll still be chayiv for that. But according to the Minchas Chinuch, it wouldn't be, because the Minchas Chinuch understands Bishul / Afia as different from Zriya. So Zriya, the first part happens on Shabbos, the rest happens later, and we don't care about that. But Bishul and Afia are not like that. The whole thing has to happen on Shabbos, the beginning and the end, especially the beginning. Like we said before, it doesn't really make sense on a Daraisa level to say that you could do the Malacha beforehand and have it finished on Shabbos, and for that to be a malacha, it could be an issur d'rabbanan, but for it to be a malacha is hard to say. But so the beginning and the end of the bishul, the viafia, would have to be on Shabbos according to the Minchas Chinuch. And the Rashash would say, not that way. The Rashash would say, you're chayiv for putting it in even late Shabbos afternoon when it doesn't have time to finish on Shabbos. So that's a major difference between two major points of halacha, two major differences between the two. So just to address the question that Jonathan raised, so what about the halacha l'maisa? Let's say so it's one thing to say if you're going to do this on Sunday, so then we can figure out if you will succeed or not. But the truth is, we should say that it's a good idea anyway, right? It's a good idea to be choshesh to this day and do it. And what do you have to lose? So probably nothing. And in fact, it also sounds like from the Mishnah in Gittin that you're mechuyev to do this anyway is a knas, which we'll talk about separately. But what about if it was Shabbos? So we still have the same equation. What do you have to lose about doing this on Shabbos? So, or do you have to lose? Would you be allowed to uproot this on Shabbos? So it sounds like for most poskim, Rav Shlomo Zalman actually has a comment which seems different than this, but for most Sfarim it seems that there is not a kotzer involved in taking it out, that we don't assume, we're not really holding so much right now, in the malachas of Zareh and kotzer, but it's probably not the case that they're just inverses of each other. That whatever is Zareh, doing the opposite is kotzer. That does not seem to necessarily be true. So just because it may be Zareh to put it in, does not automatically mean that there's kotzer involved in taking it out. Doesn't mean no one says that there is, but it doesn't automatically seem to mean that. So most Svarim that talk about the Shaila do not assume that there is a malacha of kotzer involved in taking the seeds out of the ground. The issue that's most often discussed, halacha l'maisa, about this is the question of muktzah. Is it a muktzah problem to take the seeds out of the ground? And there, the assumption is that if it's seeds that are edible, that are also used as food, so then it wouldn't be muktzah. But if it's seeds that are not used as food, they're only used for planting, so then it would be muktzah, and that would be a problem. That would be the downside of doing this on Shabbos. So theoretically, you could make a case to parallel this Gemara's case about afia with that issue. But again, it seems like you have an option after Shabbos anyway, so the issue doesn't really come up in the same way. There was a major continuation of this whole prat, of the idea of what about uprooting the seeds after Shabbos or things like that. Would that make a difference? So here, the Chelkes Yoav took the position that it would make a difference, basically following the Rashash, right? The Rashash's position that you could uproot the seeds afterwards and cancel the malacha. So the Chelkes Yoav thought this as well. Chelkes Yoav, we mentioned him the other day, the author of the 103 questions in the back, the Kavod HaKashesa. So even though he was a student of the Avnei Nezer, and we just grouped the Avnei Nezer with the Menches Chinuch, but here he takes the Rashash's side, and he thought that there was a possibility of canceling the malacha afterwards. So there is a major literature about this, a lot of correspondence back and forth. There were some who wrote letters to the Chelkes Yoav arguing this point. The Sfas Emes has some comments about this in his commentary to Shas. There's the Yerushalmi that they bring as a proof. The Kli Chemda, who was another student of the Avnei Nezer, as I say, from Chumash, by Mayor Don Plotsky. So he wrote a letter to the Chelkes Yoav, published in the Kli Chemda, where he disagrees with him. There's a Machlokes Chavrusas against the both students of the, not necessarily Chavrusas, but they're both Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer. And the Maharsham has a tshuva, which he wrote to the Chelkes Yoav. There was a lot of back and forth. It's a fascinating literature if you want to spend a lot of time on it, considering this question of whether it's possible to do this or not. And the whole idea of halachos that start on Shabbos and continue into Motzoi Shabbos, what exactly is our relationship to such things? What exactly is the, if you find other malachas that have a similar structure, certainly possible to come up with a few other examples. So what exactly is the nature of that whole back and forth? So the Kli Chemda writes in his objection to the Chelkes Yoav, he says that, he quotes from a pasuk and from a Gemara, that the pasuk says that we should work 6 days and on the seventh day is Shabbos. So you can always debate what exactly is there a mitzvah saseh of working 6 days a week. There's always a room to figure out what exactly the intent of the pasuk is. But he essentially asserts that you can't tell me there's a chi of Shmira Shabbos when it's not Shabbos. So you don't have to necessarily find this so compelling, but he assumes that this is basically axiomatic. And to say that if it's possible to uproot the malacha after Shabbos, so then you'd have to do that. Then your chi of Shmira Shabbos would require you to come back on Sunday and uproot this seed. And he says, it doesn't make sense that Shmira Shabbos applies when it's not Shabbos. Shmira Shabbos only applies on Shabbos, and therefore it can't be that your responsibility not to do malacha is going to regulate your behavior on Sunday as well. Again, you don't have to necessarily accept that premise, but that was one of the positions that was argued back and forth. In any event, there was a suggestion, as you could probably imagine, at least by one contemporary sefer, that suggests that the machlokus between the Rashash and the Menches Chinuch could be extrapolated to a more general question. Anyone want to guess what the more general question is? Whether the malachas of Shabbos are about the individual being at rest or about the malacha happening. And his assumption is that the Rashash feels all about the malacha happening, that that is a crucial part for malacha to be defined as a malacha, and that the Menches Chinuch felt that you look more at the individual's action. So, for example, just to zero in on Zriya, that when it comes to Zriya, as long as you did your part, you did the human involvement, that itself is the Avera on Shabbos, and we're not so concerned about what it happens afterwards. Even though, again, if there was no potential of things happening afterwards, it wouldn't be a malach in the first place, but that's not where we look to for our focus of Chiv.
Hi. How does this relate to Chutzah? There's Akira and Anacha, mm-hmm. So we could ostensibly interrupt the malacha in the middle. And
Right. So we saw also, just, you know, we're almost out of time, so maybe we'll save that question for tomorrow. But if you saw the Meiri, we mentioned the Meiri that talks a little bit about that in terms of Yedi in the middle. You know, the question of whether Akira and Hanacha are conditions of Hotzah, it might be a relevant question. Is that really just the Hotzah is happening just with the carrying and the Akira and the Hanacha is just a technicality? Or would you say that Hanacha really is the definition of the Malacha, putting it somewhere anew? Is what the Malach is all about, or maybe it's the Akira is what the Malach is all about. So there is some room to give a subject in general. Maybe we'll come back to that. So actually, I wanted to mention one or two other parallels between Zriya and Vishal, but I guess we'll have to leave that for tomorrow, and then we have to get into the central excitement to this whole question. Two questions. One, are we allowed to make trade-offs on our own behalf in terms of little Averis and bigger Averis? And then the even more complicated question, are we allowed to make trade-offs on behalf of somebody else? Can we do Averis, smaller Averis, in order to save someone else from a bigger Avera? Again, the major excitement to the sugya. So just to quickly review what we spoke about today. So we spoke about the fact that there's an Isser, presumably the Rabbanan of Adiya Sapas. The Gemara does say it's a Chachma and a Malacha, the Gemara elsewhere. That's most of Rishonim assume there's no contradiction. That means it's a Mutter Man HaTorah, but also Midrabbanan, probably because of Afia concerns. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Chananel that it is a contradiction, so that Gemara is talking about after it's already finished. Then there's no Aver at all taking it out, but before it's finished, then there's a problem similar to Lisha. And that's what our sugya is talking about. So it also comes out to Machlokas Rishonim, whether there's a general Isser of Adiya Sapas on Shabbos, or whether it only correlates to when there was some Avera of putting it in the first place. And that affects the question of whether there is a Gzera Shlus against Kios on Shabbos and Yantif in general, and that's was the debate on the focus affecting the question of whether you can blow shofar outside of the Kiyum Mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah. We spent some time talking about all the concepts relevant to that. And then we talked a little bit about the dichotomy, apparently, between some of the malachos that, on the one hand, Zriya seems to require not focusing on the end result because it could never happen on Shabbos. But Bishul or Afia, it seems from our Gemara that if you stop the end result, then you stop the Malacha. So how do you reconcile those two? If you have to reconcile those two, so we mentioned, among other details, the major battlegrounds between the Rashash team and the Merchas Chinuch team. Both teams have many players on them, and the Rashash team maintains that they are the same, that in both cases you are chayiv b'tnai that the Malacha finishes later, and the Merchas Chinuch assumes that they're not the same, that Zriya, you are chayiv as soon as you put it in, and baking an afia, which is possible to happen all within Shabbos, there the chayiv is only when it finishes. And we mentioned there are many, many distinctions that are offered in the later Svarim between the two to explain the distinction. There's also the position, like Rutzibe and Frank, that we don't have to explain the distinction, that there is no rule that all malachas follow the same principles. They can differ from each other. That's not a problem. And then we talked about some of the significant halachic ramifications of the two. The question of, is it possible when it comes to Zriya to uproot the malach, literally uproot and practically uproot the malacha afterwards? Or do we say no, once you put it in the ground, as at least in the Avnei's version, adaita for it to staying there, then it's done, nothing you can do can undo that? Do we say, like the Rosh Hashanah, that it is possible to uproot? Then we talked about the halacha lamaisa, whether there is a malacha or a muktzah issue of doing that on Shabbos. And then the other nafkamina of what if you put something in the oven right before the end of Shabbos and it won't finish until after Shabbos, so are you chayy for that? The Rosh Hashanah would say yes, the Merchas Chinuch would say no, and it's not a question limited only to baking, could come up in the context of many other malachos as well that have such a time delay. The same question could be asked if you put them in motion on Shabbos and knowing it's not going to become realized until after Shabbos, is there a chiyuv in that sense or not? And then we mentioned that there are a few other distinctions, we'll maybe take that up tomorrow, but also that the suggestion was made, maybe a little bit overly broadly, that the whole question maybe connects to the general issue that we've seen several times as a recurring theme on Shabbos, of whether the Isser Malacha is about the individual being at rest, or whether the Isser Malacha is about the Malacha happening, and maybe that, at least when looking specifically at Zriya, maybe that Machlokas is perhaps expressing itself there. All right, everyone, should have a wonderful day.